The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Hi, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started because our panelists have a limited period of time before they have to go to their conference they're in town for. Pizza is coming, so when it comes, we need to try to, as quietly as possible, kind of go and break off and get the pizza. Those of you that I've not met before, my name is Shelley Rudge, and I'm the Judicial Clerkship Coordinator at the CPD. Staff transitions, I think, are often overlooked and something students don't know very much about. So I was so excited when Lee Ramsey, who's an alumnus of WCL, called me a couple months ago saying he was going to be in town for a staff attorney conference and offering his services to come and speak to students about staff attorney positions. And then he wrote two of his friends who were nice enough to come, Timber Smith and Blaise Lowe, and join him in this discussion today. So I just wanted to say thank you to them for their time and making time while they're in town. And I'm going to turn it over to Lee.
Thanks, Shelley. What we're going to do is we're each going to talk a little bit about our individual positions, and then we're going to talk about sort of all of the positions that are available for lawyers, non-judge positions within the appellate courts. It's actually a little broader than just staff attorneys, but we'll get into that. As Shelley said, I'm Lee Ramsey. I'm a staff attorney at the Tennessee Supreme Court. I've been there since 1991. Prior to that, I was in private practice, and then I worked for a state healthcare regulatory agency for 4 years as general counsel. The staff attorney jobs at Tennessee Supreme Court, there are 11 of us, and our primary job is to review what I guess in general parlance would be a petition for cert. We don't call them cert. In Tennessee, we have it's an application for permission to appeal. So we review every case that comes to the court, do a memo for the court, recommend whether to grant or deny permission to appeal, and then the court reviews the case and makes the decision. Statistically, we grant 7 to 9% of the cases that come before the court for a discretionary appeal, so it's a relatively low number. And as a result, the staff attorney's work includes a lot of pretty routine and boring things, but also some really interesting, important cases come along across your desk. So in that way, it's an interesting job. Timber's from the 11th Circuit. I will let her tell you about what she does, and then Bill will tell you what he does, and then we'll move on from there.
I am a odd hybrid. I'm actually a staff attorney, but I work as an in-chambers career law clerk. I've been with the 11th Circuit since it was created in 1980, and I am in chambers of Stanley S. Birch. While the staff attorney's office at the 11th Circuit has about, at this point, I think there's 56 attorneys. They require at least 1 year out of law school before they'll interview, but we've waived that on occasion. And we had a couple people from our discussion last year at SMU who got hired this past fall after they graduated. So they have started as a court now. So I encourage you to apply. Our staff attorney's office, and ours is somewhat different than some of the other staff attorney's offices in the federal system, but we have our attorneys do all pro se cases. So anything from criminal to civil, and it's a lot of agency matters. They do an initial review and then do a proposed opinion for the judges. We also do motions work, which is all the substantive motions that are filed with our court, primarily everything on habeas, which Professor Robbins is sitting in the back, so he'll certainly correct me if I make any mistakes on that, but certificates of appealability are all handled through our staff attorney's office and in form of properest motion for permission to appeal. And also any of the odd things that come up if the court asks for a memo on that. But we do all sentencing guidelines cases, And again, all criminal cases, except that if it's a huge record, we don't do that. That goes directly to chambers. There are, it's not necessarily non-argument cases. Some staff attorney's offices handle only non-argument cases, and they just handle the cases based on the briefs. Our court, the cases are not screened for argument until after a staff attorney's memo is prepared. We actually have two staff attorneys who are coming up to hear argument on a case on Tuesday at the Supremes, because the case was argued with us, and it's their work that's gone all the way up. So you're basically working as a law clerk at some point for the entire court. There's a perception, and I know there's a perception, that a judicial law clerk is like the plum job to get, and I would say that it certainly is, but I would not rule out staff attorney positions also. We've had a number of staff attorneys who have been moved into law clerk positions, so that if they didn't get a judicial clerkship right away, then they came to work for the staff attorney's office and then moved over. The 11th Circuit is also an odd animal that has my type of position, so that we're actually placed in chambers. And all I do right now is death penalty cases. But that's based on just experience with the court, and they try not to put people right out of school having to deal with those, because otherwise you get stuck on them for the rest of the year. And we're going to go back and talk about other positions in a minute. Okay, so that's basically it.
All right, before I turn over to Bill, I want to elaborate a little bit on what I do. I mentioned application for permission to appeal. Individual staff attorneys also get some special assignments, and I've been dubbed the court's rules guru, for lack of a better term. So all of the rules amendments, civil procedure, criminal procedure, evidence, appellate procedure, that come to the court each year, and there really are quite a few of them. The advisory commission is constantly recommending changes to the rules. I generally work on all those and make recommendations to the court. Drafting or whether to amend or not amend. So that's sort of a special niche that I have. Some of the other staff attorneys have their own special niches as well. And we also sometimes get drawn into writing draft opinions on some of the more complex cases. The justices on my court each have two law clerks, and they handle most of the drafting, but occasionally I'll get a special assignment as well. So I think that more fully covers what we do. Bill, you want to take a shot?
So you're the person that no one knows what the answer is. They say, ask, please.
Yes. And if I don't know, I make something up.
And no one knows any different. I'm Bill Lowe. I'm the director of the Central Legal Staff for Intermediate State Court of Appeal. My court has appellate and supervisory jurisdiction for 20 northernmost parish district courts, parish courts. We don't have counties in Louisiana, we have parish. I'll make this note to you. When my legal forebears were running an empire in Rome, your legal forebears were painting their skins blue and going into battle naked. So, keep that in mind. We have an older system in my private. A lot of common law stuff has been bleeding in lately because we do have to do business with you. I've been the director of the Central Legal Staff for 25 years. They've never had any other director of their Central Legal Staff, so they don't know any better. I've outlasted all of the judges who hired me, which is great to have your history disappear on you. And all the judges that come in, that's the first thing I do is tell them that I'll help them not make the mistakes that their predecessor judges made. I have 8 staff attorneys that work for me. The staff in my court basically does all curative work, all jurisdictional checks, record completion, record problems, lack of transcripts. Does a lot of curative work. We do all writs, all motions.
What do you mean by curative?
Record comes in, it's incomplete, lacks a transcript, it's a destination record and something that's just not included. We issue orders to get the transcript cleaned up, or we notice jurisdictional problems, notice the lack of appealability of cases, just a lot of work that goes on. So basically, by the time work gets to my judges and to their law clerks, they really have a cush job because everything they get, it has no warts or molds or scars, and everything looks good by the time it gets to them. We do the merits of all criminal appeals, and the merits of about a quarter of the civil appeals, sort of low merit, no merit civil appeals. Essentially, we're doing, by volume, about 70% of the work of the court with about a third of the lawyers that are the staff attorneys, not including the judges. Note that there's a difference between internal memoranda work and final finished writing work. There's a qualitative difference in Cameron, and he can tell you, in doing writing a memo and saying, you could do this, you could do that. You know, the trial court really screwed this one up, or this kind of thing. And then when it goes for final finished writing work, is a lot. They actually have to cut the cake on the case. They actually have to decide how it turns out. They have to decide how strong to use, what language to use, how nice to be, how mean to be, whether to fire a shot over some judge's bow or some DA's bow, you know, to warn them off of doing this again. So there's a qualitative difference in the type of work that the law firms do versus the staff firms.
Now we'll talk a little bit about just all the judges, all the positions out there in the appellate judiciary. Typically, at law school level, you think, oh, a clerkship, and that's sort of what everybody focuses on. But there are other opportunities out there. First of all, there are opportunities while you're in law school. I know every summer my court has interns, and it's an unpaid position, but I think some of the schools, they might get some credit hours or something. I'm not sure how it works at their end. But it's a terrific experience for students to come in and work at the court of last resort in a state system. You're many times first-year law students, and you get the glimpse inside of how the Supreme Court handles its cases. And typically, each intern gets to work on a workers' compensation appeal, from doing a bench memo to actually writing a draft opinion. So the feedback we get from students is very positive. They really enjoy it, and that's something to look into. Many, many states have internship programs available for law students in the summertime. And in ours, it's a six-week position. So you can do a six-week position with us and then a six-week position for money somewhere, a law firm or any other paying job, which often more attractive to law students with heavy student loan and other expenses. So an internship is really something to consider even at this stage. How many people here are first year, second year, third year? First year. How many first year? Second? Do you have any third years?
Good. Can I give my get out now message?
Yeah, go right. Appropriate time.
And a good time. I told them that I'm going to play the role of the ghost of the Christmas yet to come in Dickens' story. The ghost of Christmas future, I guess, is what it is now. But it's in the story, it was the ghost of Christmas yet to come. What I would tell you is, if you're a first year, you have time to get out now. And the message is not really get out of it. No, don't practice law. It's to give some thought to what you want from it. The second and third year should too, and so should people have been practicing 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. Give some thought to what you want out of practice of law, because the thing is, be careful what you wish for, because you might get it. Be careful what you get into, because practice of law is not easy. Not if you do a good job at it. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a noble profession if you treat it that way. It can be horrible if you not careful about how you practice it. So there's the message of the ghost of the Christmas yet to come.
All right.
They said they'd let me do that. You can go to medical school now. You're educated people. You can go to medical school. Everybody likes doctors.
Professor
Robbins is laughing, aren't you?
While Bill's speaking, though, I think his court is one of the. His court actually has paid internships.
We do.
And you know, and they make good money. So
they don't make much. It's like $11 an hour or something like that. But it's, you know, more than they make at my court.
Let me say this real quick.
I had practiced law 10 years before I went to work for the Court of Appeals, and during all that time, I was as ignorant. I must have been ignorant the entire time. I wasn't stupid, but I was ignorant. And what I figured out after I got to the Court of Appeals was I had thought that, well, you know, after you try a case, you know, it's all out on the table. The cards are all out. Any idiot can see how it would turn out. When a case goes to the Court of Appeals, it's a lot more plastic than you think it is, a lot more malleable than you think it is. If you have an idea of what you're doing in the district court when you're trying your case, when you're putting it together, how it's going to look on appeal, if you have a view of things when you get to the Court of Appeals, if you have a story about how the case should turn out, it's a lot more amenable to modification, to your preservation if you won, to modification if you lost, to reversal if you lost big, and that it's working inside. If they didn't pay you anything to do an internship, it's worth it to work inside the shop. Then you get to see, hey, look, you know, they took this record and they emphasized these facts and they de-emphasized these. I mean, you really realize that the stuff you read in the law books, we made that stuff up. I mean, it's not fiction, but we make that stuff up. I mean, and I know y'all read it like it's gospel. It's not gospel. Somebody made it up. Somebody said, oh, well, let's take this record. We're going to abstract this portion of it and we're going to write this up. And it's going to be self-supporting. You start at the beginning of it and you get to the end and go, well, that's great. That's right. It's good to be brought up that way. So getting inside the shop, if you can get an internship inside the court, get one. You have to pay them, get one. You know.
And I'll add in one more point on internships, and that is that when we have an intern in our chambers, they get a clerkship, period. So,
That's not automatic, but
I just share that. We had someone this summer who's not getting a clerkship with us because my judge is now looking at taking senior status in the next few years, and he's sort of booked up, but that's unofficial. But he was impressed with this student's work, and he has made calls, and that I understand that he's now getting a clerkship. So it was a freebie for him to do, spend 12 weeks with us this summer. I couldn't believe that somebody volunteered to do that, but it worked. So I passed that along.
I hadn't checked the numbers before I left because I hadn't thought about it, but Kimber makes a good point. I can think of three law clerks for the five justices on my court over the last, say, 5 years who were interns, and then 2 or 3 years later when they were graduating, they applied. So it can be a great stepping stone.
It's a big leg up in our court just because people know you. It's just, that's all it is. It's, you get a resume and you go, oh, did she work here last year?
Yeah. If a stack of resumes this thick comes through and the justice sees a name that he or she recognizes,
leg up. And I will also tell you that this person who had this internship this summer was not in the top 50% of his class. So he's a third year in law school and actually in the D.C. area. So, but he's now going into a clerkship. So anyway, pass that along.
Internships are sort of the first thing to think about. And then there's the obvious one, law clerkships. I don't have a lot to say because I wasn't a clerk at the appellate level. I started out when I graduated from AU. I started out as a trial court law clerk and did that for 18 months. And I'll say that if someone wants to be a trial lawyer, being a law clerk in a trial court, you learn way more than you'll learn if you just start out in private practice. And when I say learn, I mean you learn what to do and what not to do. It was so educational to me to see some really poor trial lawyers at work, because even as a first-year law clerk, I was sitting there thinking, boy, not very good. You know, so day in, day out, you're seeing the whole range of quality when it comes to litigation. Great experience. Either one of you want to talk about appellate?
Yeah, let me just make this comment. A perfect apprenticeship, a perfect three-year internship, if you ask me, would be a year in a circuit of Supreme Court staff, simple staff. You learn to do volume, you learn to turn over a lot of work. You learn jurisdictional issues, you do writ work, you do a lot of record work, working with sort of raw material at that end. Do a year as a judge's law clerk. You learn decisional processes, you learn final, finished writing work, which is different, it's qualitatively different. And then a year as a trial court clerk. And that way you get to stand off in the wings like the stage manager and watch the thing go on. You really learn a lot. You learn mostly by watching other people make mistakes. You learn a lot of that from reading appellate records. You're reading along and all of a sudden you go, oh my God, he didn't. You know, he didn't ask that. You know, the state didn't put that evidence on. Why did the defense attorney do it? You know, and you read that kind of stuff. You learn from their mistakes. But 3 years, in 3 years, what it'll do is it'll create a vector in your practice, and in 20 years, you'll be way, way, way ahead of the competition. Small vector to begin, 3%, 5%, will make a huge difference in 20 years. Something to think about. It's good investment,
invested
time.
I don't know. I don't think I can add anything to clerkships that you all probably don't know. I mean, it's obviously a wonderful thing to do. I've now clerked for a long time, and the one the obvious thing for anyone who's doing a term clerkship is that you're going to make a lot more money with a firm when you leave that. And the great relationship you get with your judge, but I will also share with you that it depends on the court, the judge's office, but most of the judges that I know from our court and from other courts that I have worked with are very, very helpful with their law clerks. They will do what they can to make sure that their law clerks are doing the kind of work that they want shown in it. It's a very supportive situation, so I don't think I can add much to the clerkship idea unless you all have any questions about that later. Since we're going ahead with this, I'll go ahead and volunteer. We actually, at the federal level and at the circuit level, you all should also know about other positions that we have. We have two motions attorneys with the 11th Circuit, and some of the other circuits do that also, but are actually in our clerk's office. They handle, and I've worked in that position for about 8 years, they handle all the emergency matters that come in. And if you are inclined to do fast-paced work, it's fabulous. You get enough of contact with the substantive legal work that you're not feeling like you're not doing anything, but you're also doing fast-paced, active work. You do have contact with the bar, and you actually have contact with each of the judges on the court. So it's a great way to find out if you want a clerk, too. I mean, that would be a great overview to kind of see that. We also have circuit mediation attorneys, and those are more experienced attorneys, typically who have mediation experience, possibly in the state or in the private sector. But we have a staff at the 11th Circuit of 5 attorneys that do just mediation. So if you're inclined to look at that sort of thing in the future, that's another interesting career perspective. And beside that, which you may never have thought of, is that there are a lot of clerks of court and judicial administrators across the country, state and federal, that are just attorneys. They are attorneys who decided either in law school or post-law school that they were interested in the administration of justice. And I would encourage you to also look at that as a possible career option.
Yeah, Cameron just led to where I wanted us to go, and that is to open your eyes that there are a lot of positions out there not just law clerk and staff attorney positions. Our clerk's office, our clerk of court in the appellate courts is a lawyer. He was a deputy attorney general for years and years and years and then became the court clerk. The Tennessee Supreme Court has the administrative office of the court. The feds have a federal administrative office of the court. There are a lot of attorney positions out there in that line of work. Two other points. One is there are career positions and there are term positions. Law clerks, there are temporary or term positions. There are permanent law clerks. Staff attorneys, there are term positions. There are career positions. We're all career people here. So just trying to open your eyes to a broader range of employment opportunities out there.
Last week, it was actually the 18th of September, the Judicial Conference of the United States just changed things better for you all, and that is that the federal judges now can only have one career law clerk, which means that they can't block those positions for those of us who are aged. They have got to open them up to people right out of school. Typically, are going to be your term clerk positions, the one-year positions, 1 to 2 years. So I would encourage you to, if you haven't thought about applying for a federal judicial clerkship, know that there will be more positions out there than there were because now they can't lock it up. They just changed those of us who are in positions right now are grandfathered in, but in the next few years, there's going to be a lot more judicial clerk term clerkships opening up.
My comment is about Lee's term versus career clerk or staff positions. What I would suggest to all of you is you're too young to make a decision to be a career law clerk or a career staff. I would suggest to each and every one of you that you try other things. There's lots and lots and lots of things you can do with a law degree. I mean, lots of things. Some of them are in law, some of them are not. There's lots of things you can do in the law. You can do trial work, you can do corporate work, you can do all kinds of securities. Man, go out and try some things. Go out and move around until you find out what it is you like to do. You might be really good at something else, and if you make an early decision to try to get inside of the court and stay inside of the court, it's nice and warm and safe and, regular hours and regular pay and all that, but you may not reach your full potential as a lawyer if you make that decision too early. What I do as a staff director is I tell the new people that I hire out of law school, you cannot stay here. This is nice and you get to come to work at 8:30 and go home at 4:45 and, see your boyfriend, see your husband, see your kids, whatever, but you can't stay here. You have to leave and you have to go out into the cold, and then later, 5 years, 10 years from now, you can come back and say, man, this is a pain. I hate this. I hate clients, and then I welcome them back because then they can make a mature decision about it, but don't plan on doing that at the beginning. Do some stuff. May find out there's something out there that you really like, and if you find out that you don't like what's out there, well then it's a perfectly good job, and there's a lot of benefits of it. If you have children, if you have a spouse that you'd like to see occasionally, if you like to take time off and take a vacation every once in a while, there's a lot to be said for working inside the court. But don't do it too early.
Don't get
married too early.
One of the things that everybody always asks and that I think it's important for you all to know, too, is salaries. Actually, we all make about the same salary, so there's no big differential between state and federal people. I can actually leave my job and make more money as a state staff attorney than I can with the Fed. So, just know that there's no magic in the state and federal system. Then obviously it depends on which court you're with, but some courts pay different. So just know that. And that as a term law clerk and a term staff attorney, and our staff attorneys at the 11th Circuit are actually hired for up to 3 years. They're on a term period. They actually started exactly the same money. So you're not going to make any know, and this is important information to know, I think.
To follow up on what they just both said, on the salary front, there is some disparity. There are some states who have relatively low salaries, but Tennessee, we have what I think is a pretty good salary structure for staff attorneys. To follow up on what Bill was saying about not starting out with the intent of being a career law clerk or a career staff attorney, just using my state as an example, you can't be a staff attorney right out of law school. The minimum requirement is 5 years of experience. As a practical matter, I don't think the court has hired anyone with less than 8 or 10 years of experience. And we have zero turnover. I think in the last 10 years, we've had 2 people leave, one who moved away because her husband got a promotion and they moved to a different city, and then one who retired. So by the nature of the work and by self-selection, I mean, those of us who choose this, we're making a decision about what we want to do with our careers. By and large, when people get into the career staff attorney or law clerk position, I think by and large, they tend to stay because it's a really good job for, well, if you're not interested in billing 1,850 hours a year or whatever the going rate is, it's a well-balanced life, regular work hours. When I was in private practice, I would wake up in the middle of the night in a sweat over, you know, okay, did I have a statute of limitations run on me yesterday or, you know.
Let me show you what it's. I've done it. Wake up in the middle of the night. Oh, just had one out. Was it yesterday? Is it today? And then you're clutching your chest, you know. It's like, yeah, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't do that. I have really interesting work. Some of it's very challenging. But when I go home at the end of the day, I don't think about it anymore. And that's a real luxury.
I do. But I don't think, but I just go into the office and take care of it.
You deal with things like Bush versus Gore.
And, yeah.
In Ray Harry Schiavo. We just do the regular stuff. Just the little stuff, you know. Armed robberies of the 7-Eleven and stuff like that. But go ahead.
All right. At this point,
and she did work on those cases, just in case you wondered.
At this point, we'll open it up for questions. I meant for this to be a very informal thing, so if you all have questions, comments, whatever, please.
What is the internship application process for the U.S. the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit?
We don't really have one.
Okay.
You just call up and call a judge and ask if they're willing to do that or write them. There's nothing like the nice little federal, you know, judicial website. There's nothing like that for internships, and it's generally very informal. Now, I can't speak for all the circuits. So the Second Circuit may actually have a more formal operation on that. The Sixth Circuit, I know, doesn't. The chief judge for the Sixth Circuit is actually pretty involved at the administrative office of the U.S. courts, and he's very much into kind of, you know, forms. So they may actually have a full application. Ours is just kind of calling up and seeing if one of the judges wants you to is available to let you do an internship. And they can be, we've had a lot of, our chambers is fairly open about this, but we actually have people who have come and intern for 1 week. So, and they get to write memos, and some of them actually have written draft opinions during that week. And sometimes it's, and they go to, you know, court, and they maybe make up the judge's bench books. We don't do, my judge does not do bench memos in-house. He actually does bench books, and you just have to kind of do work for him, copy work, and you have to kind of understand if you're in chambers, you do floors and windows and whatever else the judge wants done. It's not necessarily all pretty law work, but, you know, just kind of, you've got to flow with it. And, be open to it. So,
in our court, there we do have a process, but it's not anything that's widely publicized. But by the nature of who's interested in working in Tennessee, most of our interns tend to come from Vanderbilt, University of Tennessee, University of Memphis. Although in the last several years, we've had at least one or two in each group who've been, we had one, I think 2 years ago, who was from Yale. We had people from, every summer we have people who are from outside Tennessee. So if you're interested in an internship in a particular court or courts, just contact someone at that court and say, do you have an internship program? Or contact your placement office at the law school, and they may have some information about internship programs. So Kimber's right. You may not, if you get on the internet, you may not find any information on there. Just make the contact yourself.
And we find too, just to jump in there, you know, we will send surveys out to DC area judges and ask, do you use interns for like this? And even then we get a low response, but so many of them overwhelmingly do. So like for this area, we have a list of judges that frequently hire interns, and you can sort of create your own list by using the resources we have that have chambers phone numbers and doing what the panelists had mentioned. So it's pretty, I say we do get some postings throughout the year, but it's just a small number compared to how many internships are available. I think judges and courts get so many inquiries without having to post that they just probably don't worry about posting. So
we have paid internships, and what, I don't know if it's a rule of law, but there's an old thing about there's no harm in asking. No harm in asking. You want to work for somebody, write them a letter and say, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is where I'm going to school, and I'd like a job with you. If you've got an internship, you got anything I could do, I do floors and windows, and just ask. I mean, there's people do have positions, and even if you worked an unpaid summer internship for a judge, it's good on a resume, and it's a good experience, and there's, you just never know if you ask somebody, they might be interested in hiring you. And there are, you know, I wouldn't say that North Louisiana has all the flavor of Louisiana, but there's some nice places you can clerk in South Louisiana. Not too much fun in North Louisiana, but I digress. But just ask, you know, write a letter and ask. You know.
And we do have a couple, just to follow up on that, in terms of postgraduate clerkships. Like, I believe right now we have an 11th Circuit staff attorney posting, and we have a 3rd Circuit, and we routinely get things from the 2nd, the 4th, the 7th. So, I mean, so it's not every circuit, but we do tend to get more of those because there's a more regularly sort of scheduled process of hiring.
The reason you've got an 11th Circuit is that we hire, basically, we have about 3 to 5 staff attorneys start per month because everyone's on a term, on a 3-year term, and you have to stay basically 2 years. But after 2 years, people start looking for other jobs, and if they get one, they leave. And then we're constantly hiring with 55 attorneys. So just if at first you don't succeed and you really want a job somewhere, keep trying.
All questions?
Josh, look for in
your career law
firm? I would have to defer to Bill on this. And that is, typically a career law clerk is going to be hired from someone that they know. So it will be someone who's in the system already, and they want someone who will do floors and windows. So that there's no good, if you're a yes person, that's better than, oh no, I don't do that. And I was moved into a career law clerk. My first position was with a judge who's now no longer with us, but he hired me because he knew me. He just called me up one day. I was actually in our staff attorney's office at the time. He just called up and said, hey, I want you to come clerk for me, period. So we went over and talked, and you know, we did. That's what we did. So
the career law clerks for the Tennessee Supreme Court. And we don't actually have a career law clerk position and a term position. It's up to each justice what he or she wants to do. But a majority of my justices have had law clerks that they really like and said, "Hey, will you stay with me?" So from my experience, it's unusual, maybe possible, but unusual for somebody to be hired out of the gate to be a career law clerk. It's more of an evolution. You start as a term clerk or staff attorney, you get to know a judge, and he or she likes your work, and then you kind of slide into a career position.
Absolutely.
I think that's much more common. Up in the back?
I'm sorry.
Let me answer that. This is what I'll tell you, what I would look for if I were a judge, and I never will be. If I were a judge, what I would look for is the same qualities you look for in an executive officer in the law. What you want is, you want somebody, and this is what you should do as an attorney. What you should do is you should tell your client what the risks are of what they're undertaking. You should tell them, you should give them good advice. You should tell your judge, you're telling me you want to write it this way, but here's going to be your problem right here. And then when the judge says, that's what I want to do, you say, okay. And you turn your skills toward writing it the way that judge wants to write it. Because either through appointment or through election, that person has the authority and the responsibility to sign the thing. So what you want is, you want to have the strength of character and the ability to be able to tell the person you're working for the pitfalls, the rightness and wrongness of what they're doing, and then the ability to turn around and say, all right, you're going to sign it, I'm going to write it. Okay, and that's the doing, what we call doing floors and windows. You have to be able, you cannot operate in opposition to the person you work for. If you want to do that, we'll run for judgeship. Go, you know, help somebody get elected president, maybe you get appointed. But if you want to work for a judge, you don't want to be a candle in the wind. You don't want to be, oh, yes, judge, whatever you want to do, judge. It's not that. It's, here's my advice to you. This is a bad idea. If you want to write it that way, I'll go write it. That's the attribute. It takes ability and it takes strength of character.
I think most of the judges, I know in my court, that most of the judges, well, especially when I was younger and newer to the job, is that it was put onto me, you are counsel for the court. You are here to represent us. Now, tell me what I'm supposed to be doing. I want you covering me. And make us look good. When it goes up to the Supreme Court, we want at least someone being able to file a dissent based on what we wrote. So I think you can't take a position and stay stuck to it as an attorney with working for a court. You've got to be open to all sides. So that's kind of where I guess.
What you're doing when you do that is you're trying to supplant the judge. And as a staff attorney, that's what I want all my staff attorneys. Cannot undercut the judiciary. You cannot take their job. If you want it, go get it. Go spend $250,000 to come take the Atlanta Hawks. Go shake the hands, kiss the babies, and go to the Lions clubs and join the Rotarians and whatever you need to do. Or go get appointed. But you know, the judge says this is what I want to do. You go do it.
But you cover it. I mean, you make sure
you write it as best you can. You write it the way they want to do it. I tell judges before, I've written a lot of stuff, and I tell them, judge, this is wrong. You're going to get reversed on this one. But if you take this section and you tone this section down right here, they might not notice. You might stealth this one by them, and you might get away with it. Now, oh, well, thanks. And we'll take it and we'll tone it down, you know. And sometimes, you know, more often than not, we get away with it. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to, in effect, not necessarily oppose them privately, but you have to stand up to them. And when they make the decision, then you turn, you take your marching orders, and you go ahead and do what you want. It's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun being inside the shop. I mean, it's, you know, I'm jealous that she got to do all those, the big name cases. Let me brag on her. Her judge was the one after the Schiavo deal that stood up. And this is a Bush 1 appointee, a hardcore Republican that stood up and said, Congress, President, step off. We have our job to do. You have yours. Let us do our job. And you know, it's kind of like only Nixon can go to China. Only a Bush 1 appointee can tell a Republican Congress and President, hey, everybody's got their role. Step off. Let us do our job. And that was job was quite proud. And I mean, you were proud. No more questions.
Back up here.
I just have the same question for actually applying for law firm positions with staff attorney's offices. What the staff is looking for.
Volume. What we're looking for.
Yeah.
For staff attorney?
Yeah. I mean, here's somebody who hires. So, what do you want?
What I'm looking for is somebody that can do large amounts of B-plus work. I don't know, kids. You know, this is the worst, and this is what I'm talking about, the qualitative difference between law clerks and staff attorneys. Staff attorneys, what was the old Saturday Night Live skit about the change bank? How do you make money? Volume. That's all they did was make change. Well, that's what staff attorneys do. You've got to pick stuff up, cut down to what the issues are in the thing, cut the thing up into pieces, move it out, move it down the line, and pick up another piece of work. The same thing you do in a law firm. It's what they want in a law firm is a lot of good work, B-plus work. A plus 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 work.
Lockups,
do that stuff.
Our staff attorneys are generally guided by a 3-day rule. If it's going to take more than 3 days, it goes to chambers. So you're doing exactly what Bill says, high volume work.
Yeah,
we're different in our court. We don't really have that time pressure. What we're looking for is excellent research, excellent writing skills.
You're the Supreme Court in the state of Tennessee. We're an intermediate court, so we're handling a lot of stuff that never, you know, it's a very, very, very flat pyramid in most states. You know, the stuff that gets to the highest court in the state is a tiny percentage of stuff.
Not just in the state.
Well, in the federal state. It's a very flat pyramid, so we're handling the bulk of the stuff, and probably 95-98% of the decisions we make, that's it. Never goes anywhere else. It's done. That's all the justice anybody's ever going to get is from us. So, and they all get the kind of esoteric issues, kind of, you know, the policy fundamental kind of stuff, esoteric issues, you know. They have to be answered.
Our court had a case a number of years ago in which it was a criminal case, and the court said in that case, we function primarily as a law development court, not an error correction court. So there are many times when we will get an application for permission to appeal where we thought, like, yeah, the Court of Appeals got it wrong, or the Court of Criminal Appeals got it wrong. But we don't grant permission to appeal just to correct the error. It has to be something bigger than that case. So at our level, we're looking for research and writing skills. More questions?
Well, a follow-up question with that is, what demonstrates that on someone's resume, aside from maybe the obvious one of being on law review, but what demonstrates you have excellent research and writing skills?
I've seen people submit articles that they have written for other, you know, non-legal materials. Again, you know, what you want when you're applying for any job is to make a connection with that employer. Mr. Lowe over here is big into blacksmithing, and Lee is a big person into photography. And if you tie in, I mean, I know this sounds kind of silly, but it's the truth. If you're not on law review, but you're writing for some other publication, submit it. Because if we see, we want writing, we want legal, I mean, we assume you know legal research. I mean, you can't have gotten through law school without having to grunt through legal research. And feel free to submit your legal research memoranda that you had to do for that class. Any writing sample, but if you can tie in and you happen to know that the judge you're applying for likes sailing, submit the sailing article. It's really okay.
Just have 4 minutes, 5 minutes left. Any more questions?
I'd like to thank you all for coming. I appreciate all your comments, and I agree with everything you say. So I want to put in a plug for these staff attorney by whatever name positions. My first job after law school was as a staff attorney called something else, pro se law clerk, at the U.S. Court of Appeals in New York City. I was a third-year student who had an interest in, and basically only in, criminal law. This was the single best job in the country for me. It was a 2-year clerkship working at a high-level U.S. Court of Appeals. I kept a log of all the cases I worked on, so in 2 years, I worked on 350 cases. 346 of them were criminal cases. It set up the rest of my career. Don't get me wrong, I love what I'm doing here at Washington College of Law, but that job was just as good, maybe even better. This notion of clerking for a judge versus for a court, you can go both ways on it. If you clerk for an individual judge who's not a good mentor, then you may well be stuck for a year or two. Not all judges are wonderful educators. I worked for 15 judges on a court. I got to know about 13 of them very well, and to this day I'm still friendly with those of them who are still alive. Not the dead ones, not friendly anymore.
I think that's one of the things that you exactly that you overlook when you look at a staff attorney's office is that you are then, you're working for and you're the attorney for however many judges are on that court. So all of a sudden you've taken on the, I think Bill said this a number of times to me, but it's, you've got a very high level client, probably the best client that you'll ever have, and that will lead you to other opportunities, and I think that's right. I mean, that's something that we overlook a lot. I think is that, clerking is such a great job. Staff attorney position is actually a better job.
I've known a lot of staff attorneys over the years, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here. I have never known a staff attorney who did not get the job he or she wanted immediately after that position.
That's right.
That was my rebuttal when people would ask me, when are you going to practice law? Like I was. And I would say, some lawyers represent lay people, and they know nothing. And some lawyers represent other lawyers, ordinarily in divorces, who don't ordinarily know much either, but they're at least lawyers. I represent lawyers who know a lot, and they have the power to decide what happens. And I said, I've got the toughest lawyers, the toughest clients in the system, and, I am practicing law, but it's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun working in court, and you'll learn a lot, and it will vector your career. Can I leave them with the best piece of advice?
I have one other thing, and then you can do your inventive advice. And that's that one of the things that Professor Robbins mentioned, his position is pro se law clerk. Pro se law clerks are also in every district court, federal district court in the country. And that's something that I think a lot of people overlook. They're doing magistrate clerks or something that people don't necessarily apply for. They don't think about those positions, and those are incredible positions. You will do more work as a magistrate court clerk than you will in any other job that I can think of, and you're going to be exposed to a lot more people. So, okay, go ahead.
Okay, the two best pieces of advice I ever got was from the first lawyer I ever worked for. The first one was, he said, I was 24 when I graduated. He said, son, he said, you're going to die with your boots on. He said, so start taking all the vacation time that you can get. Take it now during your career because you're never going to get it after you retire. But he's turned out to be wrong getting ready to retire. And the second piece of advice, and this is the best piece of advice I can give you, right before you go back into court, go to the bathroom. Do you think I'm kidding you? You'll see. Am I right? He won't admit it, but it's true. You can outweigh another lawyer.
We don't wear boots in the North.
Oh, not the boots, but to go to the bathroom part, If you can outweigh the other lawyers and the judge,
you're in good shape.
All right. Thank you all. If any of you think of questions later, Shelly has my email address. Don't hesitate to shoot me an email.
Yeah. And on behalf of Papa John's, I'm apologizing because they lost our order. So I'm sorry, guys. I've been doing program for almost 5 years. This is the first time a pizza has just never shown up. But it's not, it wouldn't be here for another hour anyway. So.
Is anyone emotionally traumatized by this event? I am.
Pizza doesn't work.
More
importantly, I'd like to give a round of applause for our panelists.